Good evening, everyone. I'm Linor Moudou. Welcome to Health Chat. April is World Autism Month. Autism encompasses a wide spectrum of disorders, including profound inability to communicate, and it is estimated to affect about 1 in 68 babies in the United States. The U.S. Centers for Disease Control and Prevention says about 1% of the world's population has autism spectrum disorder, or ASD. ASD is reported to occur in all racial, ethnic, and socioeconomic groups. In the United States, more than 3.5 million Americans live with the disorder. There are no official statistics available on the prevalence of autism in Africa. However, medical experts say the condition is on the rise in Africa and seems to be on the increase in other parts of the world as well. We will discuss autism on the program today. And joining us via phone from New York City is Molly Olapini, founder and CEO of the Global Autism Project, an organization dedicated to promoting the acceptance and integration of individuals with autism worldwide. Ms. Pini, welcome to the program.
Hi, thank you so much for having me.
Thanks for joining us. Also joining us via phone from Maryland, outside Washington, D.C., is Dr. Julia Ejiogu, founder of Autism Care and Support Initiative in Abuja, Nigeria. Dr. Ejiogu, thank you so much for joining us.
Thank you very much for having me as well.
And we will have our discussion on autism in a moment, but first, here is a report by VOA's Jessica Berman.
Children with autism spectrum disorder have trouble communicating, learning, and socializing with the outside world. The condition runs the spectrum from mild awkwardness to complete social isolation. So far, 65 autism risk genes have been identified, but how they disrupt the brain's natural development is still unknown. Investigators think there could be anywhere from 400 to 1,000 autism genes altogether. Using what they call a machine learning computer program, researchers at Princeton University in the United States discovered 2,500 genes they believe could play a role in ASD. The new leads were published in the journal Nature Neuroscience. A researcher at Princeton's Lewis Sigler Institute for Integrative Genomics, Arjun Krishnan, says there are 25,000 genes in the human body. To narrow down the genes within the vast brain circuitry that may contribute to the development of ASD, investigators looked at the huge array of connections among genes responsible for brain function. Krishnan likened it to finding friends on Facebook.
Facebook wanted to find out who your friends are and wanted to suggest a friend for you. What they would do is to find out who your friends are and then find out other people who are friends with those same people. And if they are, they are very likely friends with you too. So that's how they give suggestions of new friends that you might know. And we use a very, very similar strategy.
Krishnan says the machine learning program identified similarities between brain-related genes and the 65 autism risk genes, finding still other genes that are friends of both. Princeton University computer science and genomics professor Olga Troyanskaya says certain combinations of genes may explain why one child on the spectrum is mildly affected and another child is severely disabled.
A lot of evidence points to the fact that their entire set of what the rest of their genetics looks like likely has a very strong impact on what outcome that would have, both whether they would have autism and pretty much for sure what exact symptoms they would have.
There's no cure for what has become one of the most common developmental disorders to strike young children, but early intervention in the form of physical and behavioral therapies has been shown to be beneficial to youngsters with autism. Unfortunately, there's no diagnostic test beyond observation, but researchers are hoping their work could eventually lead to a way to diagnose very young children so they can be helped as soon as possible. Jessica Berman, VOA News, Washington.
Ms. Pena, let me come to you and ask you your take on the fact that we seem to see an increase in the number of children with autism. What do you make of this? Do you feel like, do you think it's it has to do with better diagnosis, or it's just that more children are really, in fact, being affected? Molly? Molly Pagny? Did you hear my question? I think we're having a little trouble.
Hello?
With Miss.
Hello?
Hello, is this Molly Pagny?
Yeah, I don't know why you weren't able to hear me.
Oh, okay. All right, great. We can hear you now. Please go ahead.
Yeah, I mean, I think there's a lot, you know, there's a lot of debate currently about why there's sort of this observed increase in autism. And I think, you know, it could be a combination of a number of things. It could certainly be better access to a diagnosis. It could certainly be increasing. I think the important thing is that we know the rates are about 1 in 60 currently. And there are those children today who need services. And that's the work that our organization focuses on.
Okay. Now, Dr. Ijeogu, you are a family medicine specialist. Tell us about what you are observing in terms of the number of children affected with autism in Nigeria.
So, like you rightly mentioned, I believe the reporter had mentioned, the statistics are vague. Research isn't readily available to us, but we know that Nigeria is a country with a high population, and we can infer that, you know, being that we have a lot of people in our country, mm-hmm. We will have lots of children who are being identified with this. Remember, culturally, no one is willing to say that autism is present. Most people would rather keep their children away until it becomes really difficult for them to handle these children, and then they seek help. And so, with regards to statistics, we're not very clear on what is available. We just know that more individuals are coming forward now to identify with our program. And that's how we know that, you know, there are a lot more kids who need our help. So, with Molly, I agree with her that the most important thing is actually that we identify these children, mm-hmm. and we tell them that there are resources available for them, and that we convince their parents and their guardians that they can actually learn.
Very, very important point. And Ms. Pagny, Dr. Ijeogu spoke about the cultural influence of the families that are reluctant, maybe reluctant to come out. What is your observation in terms of the way autism is being accepted in the Western world, in particular in the United States? Because from research and from reading, I know that stigma, it's a problem for children and families dealing with autism.
Absolutely. I think we've really seen a shift in the U.S. from awareness of autism to acceptance of autism. I know our organization is playing a big role in changing that conversation from awareness to acceptance, which in some ways is a bit ironic because in a lot of the places where we work, they are at the awareness stage. You know, I think we talk about sometimes the cab driver test when we travel to other countries and work in other countries. And just to back up a bit, the work that our organization does is we partner with people like Dr. Ijeogu, who run centers for people with autism around the world, and we provide the training in the admin practices and the clinical practices so that they can become centers of excellence. So when we travel, we talk about this cab driver test, right? When I get into a taxi and I say to somebody, do you know what autism is? What do they say? You know? And certainly, I started this organization 13 years ago in Ghana, also in West Africa. And I remember when I first moved there and was talking about autism, people would say, I have no idea what that is. And towards mm-hmm. the end, they would say, oh, I've heard of that. You know, and so I think that's a really, really positive thing to observe, is kind of this decreasing stigma. You know, there are parents all over the world who send their kids to these centers. And when those parents feel comfortable and confident and are able to say, this is my child, she has autism, you know, that this is why he acts in this way, it can really, really help. I think, honestly, what we see internationally is the stigma around autism is our biggest barrier to these children accessing services.
Wow, that's incredible. And Dr. Ejiogu, tell us about the stigma in terms of the way that the parents react, or maybe the family at large. You talk about such an important point when it comes to culture, the cultural influence on a lot of things that we do for some of us who are African. Tell us about some of the stigma attached to autism, and how are you able to really confront them?
So that's one of the questions that I love to answer, because it is central to the work that we do. Because if families don't get on board with, accessing services or getting help, then really the child will ultimately not get any help. Mm-hmm. In Africa, we know that a lot of us have a particular way of doing things. It's our culture. This is the way you were raised. This is how you're supposed to behave. Well, children on the spectrum, the word spectrum is that they have several, you know, presentations of this puzzling disorder. And so a child that's supposed to speak at a certain time doesn't, or a child that is supposed to interact with their cousins or with their relatives doesn't want to do that and stays in the corner. And because, you know, they don't know what it's about, it's either the spirits have taken over the child, or, you know, they're embarrassed because this child doesn't quite fit, you know, the norm. And so our goal at the Autism Care and Support Initiative, being helped by the Global Autism Project that Ms. Molly Pinney is the CEO of, basically we focus on early intervention to identify that this child has these deficiencies in social skills, in communication, and in behavior. And then when we do that identification, we would give the parents training to be able to know what services that we provide that they can access. We also help to train the teachers who work with these children. In our part of the world, special education, you know, even though we have graduates who go to school to study this, the actual application of the knowledge isn't there. And so we have to work with teachers who teach in general education classrooms to be able to help them work with these children. And then we help them at home, you know, to be able to integrate the kids into their activities of daily living. And it's rewarding to see that our therapists are from our part of the world. I think this is what the Global Autism Project has enabled us to do, that we are not waiting for the rest of the world to come and work with our children, but they're training us to work with Nigerian children in Nigeria. So parents don't have to leave their jobs, don't have to leave their homes to look for services outside our continent. We can actually provide evidence-based care in a world-class center in Africa, you know, and it's done right. It is comparable to what you would get in the U.S. or in the U.K. or any other Western developed country that you may want to go to. So we're very proud of our association with the Global Autism Project.
That's fantastic. And Ms. Pinney, we will talk more about what your organization is doing, because we want to know how the impact is being witnessed and felt on the ground. So we have to take a short break, ladies. We'll have the news and we'll come back and continue our discussion. So stick around. It's time now for the news with Monique Winger.
Well, Ethiopia has declared an outbreak of acute watery diarrhea, also known as AWD, in the country's Somali region. The World Health Organization reports 16,000 cases in the region since January. The outbreak comes as Ethiopian authorities attempt to deal with a dire regional drought. While hundreds have received treatment for the illness, dozens have died from AWD. Federal authorities have deployed hundreds of nurses and doctors to fight the disease, in addition to 700 trained health officers. It is not clear what is causing the outbreak in Ethiopia, but the government says it is assessing the situation to determine a cause. Meanwhile, the UN Refugee Agency says the risk of mass starvation in four countries, Northeast Nigeria, Somalia, South Sudan, and Yemen, is rapidly rising due to drought and conflict. Some 20 million people live in hard-hit areas where harvests have failed and malnutrition rates are increasing, particularly among young children. The UNHCR says a preventable humanitarian catastrophe is, quote, fast becoming an inevitability. The organization says it is scaling up its operations, but progress is hindered by a severe funding shortfall. Finally, a campaign to vaccinate girls against cancer-causing sexually transmitted infections has led to a dramatic drop in reported cases, according to researchers in Scotland. They have found a 90% fall in levels of the human papillomavirus in Scottish women since the vaccine has been made available in 2008. HPV virus types are thought to account for about 90% of cervical cancers. Scientists hope the drop in HPV cases will lead to a significant drop in future cervical cancer cases. I'm Monique Wingo, and that's a wrap-up of your latest health news.
Welcome back. For those of you joining us late, tonight we are discussing autism. And our guest, Molly Olapini, founder and CEO of the Global Autism Project, and Dr. Julia Ejiogu, founder of Autism Care and Support Initiative in Abuja, Nigeria. Now, Ms. Pini, before we went to break, we were talking about how partnering with organizations such as the one that Dr. Ejiogu is heading is really making an impact on the ground globally. And your organization, one of the mission is to promote the acceptance and integration of individuals with autism worldwide. First of all, we talk about the stigma. So we understand the fact that there is a lot of awareness and a lot of work that needs to be done for people to even accept children and adults with autism. Tell us about this work that you are doing on this level.
Absolutely. Well, I think the first thing Dr. Ejiogu spoke about a bit is that the most important thing for our organization is that we feel the best people to work with children with autism in Nigeria are people from Nigeria. So we know already that all of our partners around the world have a certain level of understanding around the culture, around the beliefs, around the social norms, right? And so our organization partners with people such as Dr. Ejiogu and other partners. We have six partners around the world currently, and they really take the lead on how to work with these kids. And what we do is we provide the expertise specifically in ABA and the administrative practices to ensure that they'll be able to support these kids, to ensure that they'll be able to create a sustainable center of excellence. I think the most important thing about our model is that our partners are leading the way. Our partners are the voice of autism awareness and acceptance in their communities. Our partners it's called Autism Care and Support Initiative, and that's important to us, that our partners they own their centers, they run their centers, and we really work just as a consultant. I think that this piece about stigma is, as I said, it's one of the greatest barriers. But when you have a mom from India explaining to people that her son has autism and that there's a way of teaching these kids, that is accepted much more readily than if I were to come in and explain this. And I think that the other piece of that is that our partners, their country is their home, right? They're not going anywhere, usually. And so that's a really important component as well, that these services are available in-country. I think one of the things that has been really exciting to me about the impact of this work is that, for instance, our partner in Kenya, over at Kizora Consultants, they have started seeing parents who had left the continent because there were not services available for their kids, and they're coming home. Mm-hmm. And I think that's really important. You know, Africa's best and brightest need to stay on the continent of Africa. I believe very strongly in that. And in order to do that, if they have a child with autism, they need to be able to access services to help that child learn. And they need to be able to know that they live in a community where that child will be accepted and understood.
Very interesting. Dr. Ejiogu, when you look at the work that you are doing, first of all, can you give us a sense of about how many children that you were able to help, first of all?
So over the span of almost 5 years, we have been able to work with over 100 children and in different capacities, whether it's is with diagnosis, whether it's actual provision of therapy, whether it's in their schools, training their teachers to work with them. We've been doing that all these years. Our therapists are not on holiday. They work throughout the year, except 2 weeks at the end of the year. So they provide several hours of services to these children. We're seeing a lot of rewards, especially in recent times. We're starting to see older children. Initially, it started with kids who were, as young as 2 and as old as 5. Mm-hmm. But now we're beginning to see teenagers, which, is what happens. These children would grow. They're going to become teenagers. They're going to become young adults and ultimately adults with autism. And now our desire is that we will provide continuum of care. We're not going to, just stop at early intervention, but to continue to grow because as more research and as more studying of how to provide services for these individuals is ongoing, we are growing as well. And that's very exciting for us.
So, Ms. Pinney, how many partners are you working currently with?
We currently have 6 partnerships around the world.
Okay. Okay, and what is the process in terms of identifying the partners and confirming the partnership?
Yeah, that's a great question. So the most important part of the process is that the partners reach out to us. So we're working with Dr. Julia because she found our website and sent us an email and then went through our application process. So the first thing they do is send an application to us, and then we set up an initial phone call where we get to know each other a bit. We get to talk about what we do provide, what we don't provide, and learn what they're looking for. And if that's a fit, I then get on the phone with a potential partner, and we have a conversation and go a bit more in-depth about our model. The potential partners then provide letters of support from the community. That community piece is so very important. They send us photos and videos, so we get to know a bit more about what it is that they're doing. After that, we do our discovery visit. So generally myself and 1 or 2 other staff members we'll travel for the first visit just to get to know each other, just to get to see the work, just to see that this is a viable partnership. So far in every case when we've done a discovery visit, we've also launched a partnership. But that visit is really just to make sure that everyone's really on the same page. Mm-hmm. And then after that, our organization sets up our training. And so what that looks like is every week, Dr. Adiogu's staff and my team here in the U.S. speak to each other over Skype. They send videos of working with the kids so that we can make sure that the training that we're doing is working and see if there are any questions that they have. And then 3 times a year, we send in what we call our skill core team. So these are trained professionals who work mostly in the U.S., sometimes other countries, and they volunteer for 2 weeks to be able to go and travel and work on the ground and provide that on-the-ground training.
Okay. Now, let's talk about the condition itself, even though that's what we've been talking about. But I wanted to get some specifics in terms of some signs, Dr. Ejiogu, because some people still are very much ignorant in terms of how to recognize or when they should speak to their doctor or to a specialist. What are some telltale signs that something may be going on with the child and they should seek help?
So, I always say that every parent, every mom, every dad, every guardian, uncle, and aunt is a doctor, mom, doctor, dad, doctor, uncle. And as long as you're observant, you will pick up certain things where you're like, something is just very different. Mm-hmm. And in Africa, we take care of all our relatives, so most times we're able to compare, you know, children who at 6 months are not engaging in what we call a social smile. So you smile at a baby and the baby smiles right back, you know. Mm-hmm. Eye contact by 6 months is limited. You know, they're not able to, like, you know, look into your eyes. It's something about looking into another person's eyes that shows that we both are connected. It's a human, nonverbal way of communication, you know. And as they start to get older, 9 months, 12 months, a year, they're not making these babbling sounds that babies make, you know. They're not able to wave or to point, you know. Things like that as they start to get to 1 year. And then you notice that most people will say, well, he's very quiet. And maybe, you know, when you call the baby doesn't turn. And you're starting to ask yourself, is this baby deaf? You know, you know, these are some of the things. And if you notice, the child gets easily irritated by certain clothes. Let's say there's a tag on a shirt. You know, and once you put it on, this baby screams with a very shrill voice. Mm-hmm. Just something out of the ordinary. You change a routine, and he's not able to adapt, you know, and likes to do certain things repeatedly, okay? Like, you know, rocking or, you know, lining up things based on color all the time, or playing with a toy in a way that's not functional. A toy car is supposed to be driven with a vroom, vroom, and then this kid just lies down and just stares at a wheel or something. Mm. You know, it's one of those things that when you see, you're going to ask yourself, well, why is he doing that? I suggest if you're asking those kind of questions, you know, a kid repeating what you say. You say something, the kid says it right back to you. Just repetitive behaviors, lack of social skills, you know, odd behaviors like that. Once you see that, I would suggest you take your child in to be screened, you know, by a physician.
And one of the challenges has been adequate diagnosis.
Yes.
Ms. Pioneer, you can come in. When we look at stories from parents, I mean, I can even speak for myself, for my sister's experience, where her son has autism. He did when he was young, and the doctor was not able to diagnose, and she kept telling the doctor, there's something wrong with my son. He said, no, boys take time, and, you know, they speak later, and turns out he was diagnosed at 4. So, What do you do when you don't have that expertise to have the diagnosis to get then the care that you need? It's very, very challenging. Dr. Ejiogu, I mean, in the African context, maybe these are stories that you hear perhaps often. I know time is running out, so I'm going to let you maybe say one or two words about this.
Yes, absolutely. So this is what I would say to our people in Africa. You know, now we have the internet. There's so much that is on there.
Okay.
And if you can only, if you're not sure, you can type in autism and go to, you know, the Global Autism Project's website, the Autism Care and Support Initiative's website. Just type it in and ask what the symptoms are and see if the child that you're worried about is displaying 2 or 3 or 4 of these symptoms. Once you see that, ask for help. Don't wait. Yes. What if you're wrong? Always ask yourself, what if this child, by intervening early, the child has a greater chance of learning, of independence? Don't second guess yourself. Do something immediately.
Great. And we're going to leave it there. Do something immediately. That's the message we have to remember. And Mola Pini, thank you so much for joining us. Dr. Julia Ejiogu, it was great to have you with us today.
Thank you very much for having us.
Thank you, ladies.
Thank you so much.
Great. And thanks to all our listeners who are connected and listening to the show. If you want to stay in touch, facebook.com/healthchatvoa. I'm your host, Lenore Mudu, in Washington, with producer Jackson Vunganyi, with Monique Wingo for the news, and our engineer, Sule. Until next time, take care, be well, and strive to make every day a healthy day.